the COVID-19 pandemic is putting up barriers to reentry programs that help former inmates navigate their return to their communities. And we're looking at these reentry programs, what they offer here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pandemic has limited the resources available for transition programs. The head of a nonprofit called Prisoners with Children told the Orlando Sentinel recently that finding work is essential for returning citizens, and a lot of people don't have the skills or the resources to participate in the socially distanced remote workforce. Have you completed a sentence and find it difficult to land work because of your criminal record or because of the economic fallout now, or both? Is a loved one going to be released soon and you wonder how they'll do, how they'll transition back? Join in with your situation, your questions, what you see, 800-642-1234. Anthony Cooper Sr. is Vice President for Reentry Services and Strategic Partnerships at the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development in Madison. Anthony, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here.
Well, take us into your work first and the work you're doing in reentry programs. What does this work entail?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so, we entail pretty much from everything from doing mentoring, housing, also employment services, as well as doing mentoring services. We pretty much help people navigate almost all realms of life once they return home.
All right. So all realms, and there are so many changes for these former inmates as they go back to their families, their communities. And this is a really fragile time. What I would assume is you can't have many missteps here. Things have to go pretty smoothly. How does your reentry program facilitate that smoother transition, if you will?
I mean, one of the main things is being able to just be honest and being straight to the point, but also letting folks know that they don't have to do it alone. I think that's one of the main things that's more important, is the fact that, because when people, especially returning citizens, are coming home from prison, it is the fact that people feel like, hey, I either got to figure this thing out, or I have to get back out there doing what I know how to do best. And you know, if I'm being honest with you, you know, everything has changed. I mean, from the way how people are placed into employment, the way how housing is set up, the whole nine. So even for people who may feel, say, this is their third time going to prison or whatever the case may be, whether if it's on a sanction or new crime, you know, most people, they feel like, man, how do I readjust in this craziness, in the mess that's going out in the community?
And when you say everything has changed, Anthony, do you mean everything has changed since the pandemic, or was transitioning even very difficult before the pandemic?
I feel transitioning was hard before, but with the pandemic, it just added a whole new level of things, because there's, you know, there's fears from individuals saying, hey, you know what, because I know that put out there as far as, all right, there's people in prison who have got COVID. So are they just being released and being put out in the community? What type of services are they receiving? You know, I've had employers who I've worked with for years at times that they would say, hey, you know what, this person is just now coming home from prison. I'm sorry, right now we're not taking anyone. You know, they say it a little bit more discreet than that, but it is those types of barriers that where, you know, people are, when they come home, they're trying to figure out, how do I survive? For most, it's like, okay, look, if I can't find employment, if I can't find proper housing, if I don't have a way to be able to feed myself, by doing things the right way, what am I left to do?
Yeah.
So that whole thing, and that's why I say it's different, you know, and those challenges are, you know, they come. Sometimes we're able to navigate with certain employers. You know, they're trying some different things. One of the blessings of our organizations is that the fact we do have housing as well. But of course, we have limited housing compared to the influx of folks that are that want to either come back here to Dane County or will be released from prison.
I want to introduce you. We're talking with Anthony Cooper Sr., who's Vice President for Reentry Services at the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership and Development. That's based in Madison. And we're looking at the support systems for former inmates who reenter their communities, especially amid the pandemic, what they're being faced with and how these services are working. Has a friend or loved one recently been released from prison and you're wondering how you can help them? What are you seeing out there for these transitions? Join in with your situation, your questions, 800-642-1234. Anthony, what happens if you are working with a former inmate and they can't find employment, they can't find a job? What happens?
I mean, one of the blessings and the opportunities that we try to do to make sure if there's someone that who we're already connected with, before they come home, we try to already have something lined up. But when, if someone is unable to get employment for, you know, it's a wide range of different reasons where that can even happen as well. Either the agent is not, doesn't want that person to work at their company or, you know, depending on what that person's situation is, or if there are physical limitations and things of that nature. You know, we meet them where they're at. We do our best to be able to help them navigate in any way possible to be able to get them over. I like to call it get them over the hump, right? Until we can get them into some type of normalcy. But again, I think the fact that where we don't leave people, right? We make sure that, you know, we do our part, whether if it may start off at, depending on the situation, it may start off where someone may have to stay at the shelter. And that's if that's a possibility. And that's not, you know, that's not something that, that we suggest because there's, you know, there's so much stuff that goes on there as well. So, or if there are, you know, Department of Corrections, if there are beds that are available, whether if it's through a TLP, transitional housing or emergency housing, or some type of, or there's been times where we've even been vouched for a hotel stay, if that's possible. So, you know, so again, everyone's situation is different and being able to navigate that, that's what we do. And I think more, I shouldn't say, I think I know just from talking with the men that who we've worked with over time, one of the main things that they appreciate more than anything is that we meet them where they're at, but then also we try to be able to help them. We help them navigate as much as possible with what we have.
That's where that mentor role certainly comes in, I would assume.
Exactly. Because even for myself, being a man who was once incarcerated, and then even for our staff, right? You know, I have some of the people who work for us are also individuals who have been incarcerated as well, whether if it was serving 12 years in prison or 2 years in prison or a year in prison. Or even had a sense in the county jail. So I think we're blessed with being able to just meet people where they're at to get them where they want to go.
We have Anthony Cooper Sr., who leads reentry services at the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development. Do you work in law enforcement or the criminal justice system? What do you think should be done to help former inmates adjust to life in their communities? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Anthony Cooper Sr. here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we talk about reentry programs. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Across the nation, jail populations plunged by about 25% between March and June. According to analysis by the Vera Institute of Justice, there were 200,000 fewer people in local jails at the start of June compared to mid-March, and that put pressure on reentry programs to ease the transition. Do you think state agencies should do more to help former inmates after release? What would help? Have you been given a second chance after a conviction? How is your life today? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Anthony Cooper Sr., who heads up reentry services for the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development, and he's our guide. Anthony, I want to go back to something you said earlier and probe it a little more. Is a COVID exposure in prison, are you seeing that as a barrier to getting some basic necessities like job or housing or any other type of service or basic necessity? Are there assumptions about COVID exposure in prison that are putting up barriers in the reentry process?
So I guess the quick answer is for me to yes, right? But, you know, because one, you already have the barrier when you are released from prison, you have the X on your back. But now with COVID, there's been times where individuals have had enough money to be able to pay for rent and things of that nature, and even at times even had a job. But because of their release date, have been neglected from finding proper housing. Again, we're limited in the housing of what we have, but then also sort of some of the other organizations that are out here in the community as well that are doing housing and things of that nature. So what happens is typically some people may have to go to the shelter, and that's if there's room, right? And then also try to be able to figure that out. Because some people say if they don't come walking through our doors or if we have not got a chance to be able to connect with that individual. So that becomes a challenge, because now people are just like anyone, you know, left on survival mode. But then also, even when it comes to employment, there have been times, and I want to make sure I say this, that where you've had employers that say, hey, you know, right now we're not taking anyone, but especially when they know that person's situation or know a bit and piece of that person's situation, whether if we talk about it or whether that person reveals certain things in an interview, which is, you know, also even with interviews at times can be different. Being able to talk to someone who just came home from doing 20 years, now you have to be able to teach them and navigate Skype or Zoom to them, mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But then also, which I think one of the blessings with us having so many partners throughout the state, but mainly in Dane County, is that the fact that we're, you know, our partners know, like, hey, look, we're working with this person. Do you mind if we're also a part of that interview? Or as I'm navigating that person through that interview, it's not saying it wasn't easy before, but again, now this has just put another different type of barrier on individuals who are coming home from incarceration.
We're talking with Anthony Cooper Sr. this hour, Vice President for Reentry Services and Strategic Partnerships at the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development. And we're looking at the work of reintegrating former inmates back into their communities and the barriers that Anthony is seeing amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Taking your questions as well about reentry programs, what you see, what you've experienced for yourself or a loved one, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Tony, who is joining us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Tony.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Anthony, thanks for the work that you do. It's really great work. I've been a criminal defense attorney for 15 years, and one of the things I've noticed is that a judge might sentence a person to prison, and, you know, sentences in Wisconsin have to be bifurcated, so there has to be a portion of initial confinement followed by a period of extended supervision. And I've seen so many situations where a judge will give a person 2 years in prison followed by 5 years of extended supervision. That person comes out of prison, they make it 4 years or 4.5 years, and their probation agent revokes their supervision with, say, 6 months left, you know, because the person got caught with marijuana or the person had a drug problem or whatever. The person then gets revoked from their supervision. They may get a year in prison, so they go back to prison. They come out, and most people would think you'd have, well, 6 months left of supervision, right? Because that person completed 4.5 years of their 5 years. Mm-hmm. That person comes out of prison after a year. They've got 4 more years of supervision on their head now. Mm-hmm. They get 1 year reduced from the five. And don't you think, or I guess I'd look to your thoughts on this. It seems to me that if we're talking about reforming the criminal justice system, one of the smartest things we could do is adjust that problem so that people who make it on supervision get credit for all the years that they serve in the community if something happens where they get revoked. What do you think about that?
You know, I agree with you 100%. So the, and I, yeah, because I've seen that happen time and time again. There's times that where, because we do advocacy, and so a lot of times I'm in the courtroom and we're trying to figure out different ways of, instead of this person going, instead of being revocated, you know, and honestly, you know, we have to be able to talk about crimeless revocation as well, right? So there is, that happens so much, it's ridiculous. Why would you, let me back up just a second here. So I want to make sure I mention this, and this is, I don't mind. Some people love me, some people hate me, but this is what it comes down to. The Department of Corrections, that's not what they're there for, right? They follow the business plan that has been handed down time, century after century, right? It is not to basically correct the behavior. It's to bring, it's big business. That's what you, I mean, you, and I don't know how deep we want to get into this right now, but this is, I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. How can, if I'm a person that has an addiction, and instead of me getting help for my addiction, which I probably didn't get help for my addiction while I was out in the community or whatever, because either it's program overload or whatever the case may be, why am I going back to prison? That's not going to change anything. Putting me in confinement, that's not going to change anything. Obviously, I need support. Obviously, I need help. So, right? So, I need the proper connections to help me be able to navigate life differently. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Where does the former inmate find their health care? How is their health care addressed? Because certainly addiction services would be rolled into health care.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, one of the ways is being able to, at most job centers or whatever, there's organizations like ours and others that also have connections with being able to, with the healthcare organization that who can actually help them get, you know, food stamps and things of that nature that would give them that additional support. You have organizations like Access Community Health that we also connect people with. And of course, you know, there are different organizations throughout the state that help in that process. Right. But I think, and this is me also putting this out there as well, you know, there's also a lot of that work should be done in the prison, right? What people fail to, in my eyes, and what people fail to really talk about is the fact that where, you know, reentry doesn't start 6 months before you come home. Reentry starts the day of incarceration. So that changes the whole dynamic, right? So people, once a person is incarcerated, yeah, you may talk about what programs that, and if you can go into a program or where they may decide where they want to put you, whether if it's in Fox Lake or up north in Jackson or whatnot. Those are just some of the things that what they may do, but there's no true transition or correction that's actually happening in the beginning. right? So what we typically do, even through our advocacy work, we try to make sure that, hey, look, how are you, you know, if a person, no matter how much time that they may have, right, we want to say, how are you going to navigate the situation once you come home? Who are the loved ones that you, who you're leaving behind? What does that connection look like? You know, so on and so forth. Writing someone and just saying, hey, you know, man, how are you holding up? You know, how are things going? You know, and so on and so forth. That's how you, one, you show someone that they have community, even in the midst of their mess, right? And so, and that is so important. Our Department of Corrections does not do that. I think that's the best way of answering that.
Anthony Cooper Sr., Vice President of Reentry Services at the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development. We're looking at that pathway for formerly incarcerated people to find stable jobs, to support their loved ones, to pursue their life goals, contribute to their communities. What experience have you had with a reentry program? Are you a reentry specialist for a nonprofit or in your county? What can you say about your program? 800-642-1234. We will be back in a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the morning show, I'm Kate Archer Ken. Thanks for being here for this conversation. Jobs are scarce, resources limited, support systems, they're strained. We're looking at the work of reentry programs for former inmates returning to their communities. And this transition after a lengthy prison sentence is complex, even in prosperous economic times. There's estimates from the Prison Policy Initiative in 2018 that found that formerly incarcerated people were unemployed at nearly five times the rate of the general population. Anthony Cooper Sr. watches all this. He leads reentry services at the Nehemiah Center, and he's our guide to the conversation. Let's take another call now. Nancy is joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. My sister's husband has recently been released. He's a felon. And they cannot find housing, and the parole officer doesn't seem to be able to help them at all. And so they're at their wits' end trying to find housing.
How long have they been looking, Nancy?
All summer.
And just, is it because that they are closed off to the housing, or that there just isn't housing stock available, or people are just telling them no?
They're just telling them no because of his record.
Anthony, what can you tell Nancy here? Anthony, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. The mute button, that pesky mute button.
Yes. Nancy. This is something that we're dealing with as a state. This is something that I think honestly, mainly in. As a state, this is it's a huge issue, right? And so of us being able to figure out different ways, I would even do some pushbacks even to his agent and just try to see what other housing programs are out there in the Green Bay area, because they may have something that yet they probably don't know. Another thing, I know what you, if I heard you correctly, Nancy, you were just saying, hey, kind of like the agent is at their wits' end and they don't know what to do. I do feel like that there are, you know, depending on his situation as well, there may be some other access points, whether if they can put them up in a hotel for a short period of time or have a contract with a hotel for some type of emergency housing in the Green Bay area. So it's possible to be able to, but that's the job of the Department of Corrections. Or if there's a loved one that who he can probably stay with, but again, this is the challenge that what we're dealing with. And if he, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Carry on.
No, I was just going to say, because if he, you know, if even with his agent, I think of really just asking, like, what is he supposed to do? Are there shelters that are in the Green Bay area that where, you know, he can stay at for temporarily? Or even if, it's because even I would even try to, if there's a possibility to even connect with some of the churches that may be out there, that they may even have some type of temporary housing, or even that may be something that if you know, if you are connected with some type of clergy and any, you know, I think that may be a way of maybe even asking them if that's something that they're even interested in.
So I'm, home. I'm hearing that just be very persistent in that communication.
You have to. Again, it kind of goes right back to what I was saying a little bit earlier, is that, you know, I feel like there's things that Department of Corrections have helped with, and when I say helped, as far as being able to, because like in Madison, we do have some housing that is connected with Department of Corrections. But I think also, but there's more of that type of housing that needs to actually happen throughout our whole state, and that's emergency housing for men and women, because people are being faced with that all the time. And you know, pretty soon it's going to be cold out here. Right. So what do you think people are going to do? They're going to try to either figure out a way to go and live somewhere where they may not supposed to live, or probably, you know, you have people, there's been times that I've met men and women that are living in their cars once they're able to get some money to get a car, to, you know, to at least have some place that's warm. You know, it's so many different ways of being able to kind of navigate it. It's just, that's a plea. And honestly, just, Nancy, I'm glad that you got on and said what you said, because that's a plea. Even hopefully people from Department of Corrections are listening to this and saying that we need more housing in the Green Bay, especially in our rural areas. People are coming home. At some point, you will be released.
Let's bring in Roberta now in Barneveld. Hi, Roberta.
Thank you, Anthony, for the work that you do. I wonder about employment, and I know that some companies and businesses can use prison labor and pay them less wages and not give them benefits. But I just wondered about prisoners who are in transition, and how does your organization help them find work at a sustainable wage? If that's one thing that you do. And I do know that, like, parole officers, they're not social workers. They often just give people the expectation to find a job, and then it gets very hard for them to do that. So that's my question, is about making the transition to getting a job and having work is so very important.
And that living wage, Roberta, is stressing. Anthony?
Huge, yep. Yeah, so thank you, Roberta, for calling in. So I think one of the things that what we do, we typically, and again, I wish I had a magic wand where I can connect with, for our organization to connect with everyone that was being released. But we do our best to make sure that we're actually connecting with different employers. Whether, and even if there's a like in Barneveld, if we don't necessarily have a connection to any employers that are out there, we will try to at least make some connections with some employers out there if we know that person is being released to that community. And then also being able to find out what are the other community services that are in that community as well. That's typically our route, because, again, the work that we do, we would not be able to do this alone, right? If we didn't have either potential partners or other organizations that are about change and really want to be able to support people that have been incarcerated. I kind of have this thing that, and people have said this about me, I consider myself a door knocker, right? So I have no problem with, whether if it's in Barneville, whether if it's in Green Bay, or on Alaska, Wisconsin, of going and knock on the door to be able to ask those questions or try to see what can we do to be able to support the men and women that who are looking for, especially when looking for employment, and being able to help them navigate that while we're there.
How successful are you able to be to secure jobs that are above minimum wage? Because living on minimum wage is very difficult, if not impossible.
Yeah, and that becomes a challenge, right? So it becomes a challenge because sometimes we are, if we have the right partners, but then also, you know, and this is something that we're really working on and here in Dane County, and it's a fight. It is. I mean, if I'm being 100% with you, is the fact that it does become a fight. It does become, but there are employers that who are trying to do that, to be able to provide the livable wage because they get it, right? But especially, and I want to, especially when we're talking about some of these smaller towns, everyone's not there yet, right? That's just the truth of the matter. But, you know, and I hate, this is a principle that I even had to use for myself. I knew I had to start somewhere to get somewhere better. And so, you know, just to kind of go back a little bit, as far as I started off my first job, home after applying for 300 or so jobs, was at Papa John's Pizza. During that time, I've been home just about almost 20 years now. So during that time, making $4.75, trying to also raise two sons, that was a hell of a challenge. Trying to make sure that I can be, be a provider, keep a roof over our head, and also, right, and whatever else, you know, bring food home, you know, so on and so forth. So those are, but I, again, had to start somewhere to get somewhere. But again, you do not, I think, and I cannot say this enough, when an individual is coming home, they cannot do it alone. We cannot do it alone as an organization, right? So that's why I'm always knocking on doors, trying to figure out ways of being able to connect with different organizations to be able to provide opportunities to men and women that who have been incarcerated.
You mentioned your children. What about children in these situations? As you work with people who are reintegrating, joining their families again, what are the kids going through?
I mean, you know, some kids understand it, some kids don't. You know, for my sons during that time, they knew dad was gone for a little while, right? But didn't know where, or didn't really understand where my mother and their mother was bringing them to, or understand the impact of that, right? So, but the kids, especially when you have teenage kids that, you know, and depending on how many times they've actually been through it, as well. But I feel, this is my own personal feeling, is the fact that where I feel that kids get lost in all of it, right? Dad's here, mom's here, not here, you know, maybe stay with grandma, maybe be a part of some type of child development services or whatnot.
Bouncing around, no, if you will, yeah, and not really feeling grounded.
A
yeah,
exactly. That becomes a challenge. That becomes a challenge for an adult. Why wouldn't that become a challenge for a kid?
We have Anthony Cooper Sr. of the Nehemiah Center telling us about the challenges facing the formerly incarcerated. Is a friend or loved one about to be released from jail or prison soon? And how are you wondering how they'll cope on the outside? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with Anthony Cooper Sr. here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Anthony Cooper Sr. He's led reentry services at the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development since 2013. And with millions of Americans unemployed, former inmates are entering a job market that is especially trying. Reentry programs are finding it a lot more difficult to help in these times. Let's take another call now. Rose is joining us from Columbia County this morning. Hi, Rose. What would you like to add?
Hi. I just wanted to say there's a program that my brother and my son went to in Hawaii. It's called Habilitat. And he was in federal prison. And what it is the program is a long-term program. They work with the community, so they have a good rapport with the community. They first, they make sure that everybody goes through their in-house program for drugs abuse, And that's their main goal, is to get everyone off of drugs. But my brother went through that program, and he they do, with the community, they go out and they take work bids. And these people in the program, they're trained to do electrical work. They're trained to build a house, to do cement work, to do various different things. And they started off doing what they called river rock, was the rocks that you put around the pools. And they're supervised, and you have someone that goes out and bids for them. And the money that they make, in turn, goes back to support the house. And, you know, Hawaii is very, very expensive. So housing is very difficult out there for anybody. And so they have a big property with everybody lives on the property.
So this is Rose, this is called, she's talking about Habilitat Hawaii. It's a long-term residential substance abuse treatment and vocational training program. Anthony, you know, is that something that you see at all here in Wisconsin?
Yes. So we do similar work to that. One of the, and I didn't really get too much into my other background as far as, so I used to be a job developer. Also, I used to be a recruiter. So that has really helped us in that way of being able to, like, in our housing to date, I want to say there's 98% of the men that who live in our housing, everyone is working a livable wage job. And again, using, and at times I have also used the tactic of being able to start somewhere to get somewhere with those men as well. And so that has been helpful, but I think sometimes, and not knowing, I don't know that program in its entirety, and I actually wrote it down when you spoke about it, to make sure I can just look up some more things about it, because we connect with different, outside of our housing, we connect with different organizations that provide services and things of that nature. If there's even, where I have a therapist that we can also connect people to, that can be able to help people deal with the things that what they are dealing with inside, as well as we're helping them connect the dots in other directions as well, whether if it's being able to establish a better relationship with their children or being able to basically even talk about some of their own hurts and pains, because everyone's not willing to go and see a therapist. The fact that they have someone that who they connect with, at times that person becomes their that in some sense their quote unquote, you know, I don't want to say a therapist, but becomes, you know, it becomes their trusted person that who they can talk to, right? You know, because I have people even to this date that where they will, you know, when they're in some challenges, they will call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, just say, hey, man, this is just where my heart is at. I just needed to get this out. You know, because if I didn't get it out now, who knows how it may end up coming out later on down the road. Those are, when you have, again, it becomes, and this is another way for me, the way I like to say it is the fact we become family in some sense, right? Because we've all, I don't care who you are, what position that you may have, we've all fall short at one point or another. We all have had difficult times. You know, some people may have more support, some people may not. And so how do we meet people where they're at to get them to where they're going? And it takes a community. Something that, you know, I always tell people, I probably say community probably a million times a day, because, you know, again,
so important.
It's not, right, you know what I mean? It's not just us, right? You know, I mean, you have to be able to form a collective to be able to really get to the true issues, to be able to challenge people the right way, but then also to be able to get people from their mess and allow their mess to become their message as well, so they can also help someone else.
Anthony, up to this point, we've really focused on men who are former inmates and moving back into their communities. What is reentry like for women?
It's again, another challenge. And actually, there's, you know, actually, we're talking about it ourselves, of being able to develop some housing even for women, you know, because it becomes a deeper challenge for some that, you know, if they've been in prison for a while, and they have children, and don't have the necessary supports. So that also adds another level to the trauma that what people deal with, right? And this goes both ways for men and women. is the fact that, think about when you come home and you're unable to provide, or you're unable to see your child, or you have to be able to set up visitations. And what does that mean without the necessary supports that you need for yourself to be able to better communicate to your child? Services, and this is no, this is not it's talking bad about like social workers and things of that nature, but if my main thought is to only see you as an authority figure, automatically you become a fear for me. You become a part of my trauma for some. Right. Think about women who are trying to navigate from having children. It's so many different layers to it, but that happens to everyone. So a lot of those things that, it's all tied together. And what we do, we have wonderful women organizations that are also here in town. Someone who I respect and talk to, she's also a part of our Nehemiah team as well, Jackie.
So
Hunt.
Very much a network. I want to just squeeze in a question here. Terry called from Oshkosh, couldn't stay with us. Terry says one of her friends was recently released from the Waupun prison, and after his release, he went to the bank to get money he'd earned while being incarcerated after 20 years or so, but was unable to get the money for a week. And Terry doesn't understand why, since the prison knew of his release, that this would happen, and wants to know, has this happened to people before that you've worked with?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time? You kind of went out just a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Terry in Oshkosh wondered, her friend had been released from prison, couldn't get access to the money that they had earned while in prison for a week. There was a delay. Have you seen that happen before?
I have seen that happen. That can happen. I mean, typically that happens, some type of administrative mix-up. Or whatnot that happens in Department of Correction, but I don't want to discount that. It's just that being a mix-up, because the thing is, that's that person's life that now they have to kind of try to navigate. Think if, and I'm not sure if for Terry, if that individual is able to go and stay with her, or but one of the things, think if that person didn't have someone have support. Or some type of support system, right? So that means this person, 9 out of 10, would have been, if they didn't go to a halfway house or some type of emergency housing, 9 out of 10, that means that this person is out here on the street. Now think about being out here on the street, knowing that you have some money, at least to be able to get you a hotel. But the thing is about, and if we're being honest, no matter how much money you may have, that the money that you're spending in a hotel, as fast as you got it,
it'll
as
disappear.
Fast as it's gonna leave your pocket.
Yeah.
Right. right. You know, so that is just one of the other things that, you know, again, Department of Correction has to do a better job at being able to provide that essential housing, but also being able to utilize the community to be a part of that as these people, as folks are coming back home.
Anthony, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Anthony Cooper Sr. with the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development here on the Ideas Network.